Well, welcome back to Hour 2 of Paranormal 360. In the first hour, we heard from veteran investigator Thomas Ferrario, whose decades in UFO and anomaly research began in 1969, eventually led him into the ranks of MUFON, working directly with founder Walt Andrus before serving as assistant state director for Missouri. He co-founded MUFON's dive team with Debbie Zigmeier and joined legendary field researcher Ted Phillips in 2006 and became part of the elite SIU team, documenting the baffling and often dangerous phenomena known collectively as the Marley Woods Project. Now, in this hour, we move beyond the origin story and into the extraordinary evidence, the sightings, the encounters, the moments that challenge the limits of reason, from luminous spheres that seem to respond intelligently to distortions in time itself, and encounters with entities that defy description. This is where investigation crosses into confrontation. What's really happening in those Missouri woods? Is it an ongoing intelligence observing us, or something older that's been here all along? Stay with us. It's time for Hour 2 of The Secret of Marley Woods. It begins right now with my guest, Tom Ferrario, on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Tom, again, thank you for being here with us this evening.
Good to be now, here.
We have a link up for Tom and his YouTube channel so that you can go see the evidence and some of the things that he's got up there, the information that they're keeping out. Before the break, I said and was curious, is there a definitive danger to this? I mean, you know, you can't blame a lion for being dangerous because it's just doing what it does. So I'm cautious with the way we use danger. Do you feel that these things are malevolent in nature or simply showing off the abilities and powers they have in that area?
I believe you're right in both cases. I think it's a combination of both. I really do. And some people in this field have just labeled it as it. Let's just say our welfare is not their intention. And a lot of people come away with this, believe me, more seasoned researchers than I have met that have said that this is evil. And it uses fear as a motivation. And as does it feed on fear or use it as a tool? I've seen it do both. So there is a danger to it. And I have to go back to just a short little thing, as I mentioned in the last hour, about the effect that the microwave had, the light beam, on Ted and I. And Ted always requested that we didn't speak about anything unless we do it the scientific way, which we had to back it up three different ways, methods, and we did. And like in my case, when I came away with this, the visual thing, my eyes, Ted had suspected this was microwave in origin, the damage that was done out there. And I'll go into this harsh mutilation. But after he found out, I went, had my eye surgery for macular cyst, which is you can come out with loss of vision or good results. I came out with good. And I asked the surgeon, the people, where do you get macular cyst? And at the time, I wasn't that old. They said it's something usually old age. We see in older people. And but as my last visit to the optical surgeon, they removed the bubble over my eyes and tested my eyes. I asked him, and I'm so thankful I did in passing, because I said, what caused this in my eyes? And he said, well, the only time we've ever seen this in a younger person was there were two cell tower workers. One of them was up on the tower yet, and they fired this cell tower up, not forgetting he was up there, and he was exposed to great amounts of, again, microwave radiation, and he had macular cyst. So when I told Ted this, I mean, he was sad it happened to me, but it backed up his hypothesis that this was, it had to be microwave in origin, as Skinwalker now has proven in so many ways, I can, as you know. But it is dangerous. We had a harsh mutilation out there, a very graphic thing. And if you want me to go into that, I will do it.
As long as, I mean, again, we're on radio, I don't want to trigger too many people on this, but talking about some of the actual things that have taken place there are important to this story and to the history. So talk to me about this mutilation.
Yeah, the property owner at site two had a favorite horse in the barn down from his home, and he had to have it in the morning when he walked the fence line check for all his cattle on that end. He went into the barn, he gave his favorite horse some sugar. He did. Came out. He knew he closed the gate. Went, filed the fence line, was within earshot of this barn, and was in, within a matter of probably 30 minutes, and was within sight of the barn. He could have heard anything happening. He actually went by the barn and went in the barn. He described it as a slaughterhouse. The horse was pieces of horse flesh on the rafters, blood all over. And as Ted had, when Ted got there and looked at this, he said it was, and he had run into this before, it was as if the horse exploded, was exposed in a microwave oven, he said. And so what does this to an animal and why?
Right. Well, that would be easy enough to test, too, if it's microwave technology, because the interior would have cooked at a different level. Things would be that way. Were you able to ascertain the type of effect that took place? And in looking at the culmination of these vivisected body parts, what were you able to, you know, kind of uncover?
Right. And absolutely, it goes into, like, the ranchers over the years. One rancher had a certain injury. Like Ted got visual, he got sick, nauseated. I had the other one. And microwave radiation has a strange effect on people that it depends on the moisture content in an individual can greatly affect how the microwave affects that body. Just the moisture content can greatly change the effects of microwave radiation on an animal or human.
All right. You've seen the damage that it could do. You see the attack. I mean, do you think this, again, was a clear attack on this horse? Or do you think it was, what's that term they use, collateral damage of something else it was doing?
I don't think it was an artifact of a technology that was there. Just, I really believe it was to instill fear and use fear. And believe me, the fear generated in that community after that, It controlled people.
I would guess. I mean, do you see a high motion of people leaving, living in that area and kind of getting away from that?
It's basically all on these two ranches. It's family members that have lived there. As the family expands, they build a home on part of the ranch. There are areas in the ranch that I will tell you that the older gentleman that had the ranch in the beginning, they don't like or don't let their family members build in some of these areas, in some of the hot spots, or as Ted called some of these, the Porto areas. So there are definite repetitive areas on these ranches.
Well, NIDS... NIDS had come along and they were doing investigations of Skinwalker and in that area. Why has the government not stepped in, especially with Bigelow involved? Why have they not taken over this property for testing purposes? This sounds like they would be working on some kind of weaponization of whatever this is.
I do know there was some government involvement at the Bigelow Ranch initially, and I can't really go into that in depth, but I will tell you at Marley, people always ask Ted and us, do we believe that the government was monitoring us or had any involvement in anything we did out there? And I have to honestly say, I really don't feel that way about Marley.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and pick up from there. Thomas Ferrario, our guest, The Mysteries of Marley, right after this. Thomas, what about strange disappearances and deaths in and around that area? Has that been a problem with researchers? And I don't mean just the occasional hippie that walks into the woods that wants to get off the grid and then just vanishes, but I'm talking about people that boots on the ground trying to understand this. What can you tell me about the effect and possible
missing people? I will tell you, I'm glad you asked that question. We've only had one possible abduction case in Marley, and it's a very unique case with one of the family members that lived on the outskirts of the ranch. I'll just encapsulate this again, real short story here. But virtually, it was a family that had a special needs child, and the individual, they had a habit every Sunday morning of making this child his favorite breakfast. And one morning, he came down, and the child, even winter or fall or spring, They had a problem. They couldn't keep shoes on this individual, which was about 12 years old. And so he went out one morning, Sunday morning, while breakfast was being made. He went out the front door. They heard the door slam. They went out, called him for breakfast. They had his favorite breakfast, which happened to be pancakes. Couldn't find a child. There again, like in the pond, the tracks of the child went out in the lightly snowed sidewalk halfway out to the gravel road, and they terminated. Didn't go right or left. They just ended. Couldn't find the child. They called the local authorities. They had a pond behind the house. Their worst fears, somehow they thought the child maybe got in the pond. Sheriff's department came out. They dragged the pond, couldn't find the child. The family was just, they didn't know what to do with this. A week later, the family on a Sunday morning is sitting in there having coffee. Still, they don't know what to make of this. They don't know what to do. They hear the front door open, and in runs the child. Now, it had been freezing temperatures. He didn't have hypothermia, no sign of anything on the child. No worse for the wear. A week later, comes in looking for his pancakes. Now, where was this child? Had he been abducted? Had he gone through a portal? Ted actually feels it's a combination of both. He actually had been taken through a portal. It was the only, which there are other things out there that led to this determination. But here this child came in his mind. Of course, he has special need. He couldn't describe where he was or what happened. The time frame in his mind was he just came back that same morning. So how do you explain that again?
Ever been thought of maybe putting that child through regressive hypnotherapy to see if maybe more would be revealed?
If it would have been now, and Ted, this actually happened in the late 50s is when this actually occurred. So there was nobody to run to, nobody to go to authority that understood this. And if it would have happened now, there would have been all kind of options, I will tell you. And Ted would have made use of those. But unfortunately, this was an event that happened in the late 50s. And there's not much answers, not much can be attained from that. But we do know it happened. It was documented. And Ted had the records of this. So how do you explain that again?
Right. What can you tell me about, obviously things go missing, people go missing, they reappear. It seems like it's time lapse moments for one person could be hours or days for another, yes. With the way this is observed. But being in that area and that there's appears to be some kind of alien interaction or interdimensional being interaction, have you ever considered having regressive hypnotherapy for yourself to see if maybe there are things going on that you've witnessed that have been wiped away and taken from you?
I truly believe that it's in my own, everyone has to make that decision up for themselves.
Right.
And Ted over the years just chose not to go that route. And I actually felt that way too. I didn't. And I've had personal experiences before I got involved with Ted and that, my family and submit things and I will tell you, every ufologist I've talked to that's in it for serious work or research has had personal experiences. That's what led them into this industry, believe me. And they won't talk about it. And when I was trained to work with the Mutual UFO Network, the first thing you learn is you never share your experiences with anybody. And you're even trained when you take interviews and go out on a case research, just slight things as to agreeing with them or nodding your head gives things away, and you don't do that.
Okay, so you're literally, as an investigator for MUFON, you're there just to collect the facts, just what Absolutely. They explain to you without leaning into, oh, yeah, we get a lot of people that tell us that type of activity. Or you're not feeding the beast. You're just allowing them to reveal Absolutely. Their own hand. And I'm sure by now you're looking for specific nuances that real abductees, real experiencers have shared that are above and beyond the normal stories, right?
Right, right. And even just slight thing, just like when you're interviewing someone, you never do what I just did. You never even sit there and as they're telling their story, you never even nod your head. Even that slight gesture, yes, can influence the outcome. And You learn all the body language, believe me. And I learned from a great gentleman, an Air Force captain named Jim Cross from St. Louis, Missouri, who was a Korean War veteran, and that Bruce Whitman sent me to be trained.
Do you, with that said then, right, do you come across many people in your investigations that you feel immediately are being disingenuous? Or do you have to give them time to breathe? Because, you know, I've watched people say, oh, he was giggling through his whole explanation. I also know that's a nervous affect. When I first began public speaking, I did a lot of the, and then, and it's just because it's an insecurity. And if somebody's opening up to tell you this wild story, sometimes it's going to be an uncomfortable situation. So they're going to convey things that maybe to the outside world would look like, oh, they're just making this up. How do you kind of differentiate between a real experience and somebody just stroking you?
You know, I will tell you first, I just have to remind, you know, as Ted led me to believe and showed me in so many ways, you know, ridicule is not any part of the scientific process. And
right.
You learn over the years working with people, you develop a sense. And I have to tell you that it, the percentage of people making things up, and it's much lower than people imagine. It's, I would say it's probably 3% or less of people that come to you. And like in Marley, we have people that we had to keep their names, everything, the locations. So why make up this outrageous story? For what reason? There's no monetary gain and they don't even want to share it with anybody. So why do this? You know, that leads to the authenticity of the report. It really does.
In talking with the experiencers over the years and reading the reports that have been turned in, especially from Marley Woods, what do you find is the, maybe you don't want to say this because it can affect other people that have this, but what are some of the common affects that you see in every story? Something that maybe, just give me one point, something that it shouldn't be known. This is a button point that we kind of look for.
I think the one thing that they come away, usually they're so afraid of ridicule. That's the number one thing. And so many reports, so many people, when we do follow-up work, you know, on cases, we could have such a better documented case if other individuals, that participants, would come forward, and they won't because of the fear of ridicule and fear. And it's just, the fear of ridicule is the number one thing you come away with, and then usually fear. So that,
gotcha.
That pretty much covers it.
Let's take another break. We'll be right back after this. The mystery of Marley Woods. Listen, many of us live in this world where we want to see something fantastic. We want to have experiences that are outside of the realm of our normalcy, right? And there's places like Skinwalker Ranch, Space Wolf Research, the Marley Woods, locations that are popping up around the globe that people are talking more openly about. Do you think it's probably a good idea for people to avoid those locations instead of running headlong in to investigate them and see them for themselves, Tom? Or do you think that we need more attention on these sites and we need more people banging the drum and getting people involved and being aware of them?
I think we do need more people involved for the just the pure reason that I have to give mention right now to, I call her my sister, Debbie Ziegelmeyer. She's the state director for Mutual UFO Network in Missouri yet. And she wrote a very good book, The Alien Colonization of Earth's Waterways. She invested a lot of time in researching that. But I will tell you that Debbie is the state director now. And back when I was assistant state director with Bruce Whitman, we did not have cases like Marley Woods popping up all over. And I will tell you, it's a worldwide phenomenon now. It's becoming increasingly more active. And I will tell you that Debbie has told me of three places now that it has rivaled the activity of Marley Woods just in Missouri. And other state directors are coming forward now with cases like this. So it is, I do believe that the interdimensional boundary is what we believe is weakening. You're seeing more of this now for that reason, and you're going to see a lot more.
Is it weakening, Tom, though, or is it that we're now paying more attention than we ever have before?
I truly believe it's weakening. That's, I could get into the biblical aspects of that, and I won't tonight, but I do believe that it is actually weakening, and it's going to bring in what they call, everyone wants disclosure now, I know, and I have friends involved in that, and they're mad at me, but disclosure is not going to happen the way people think it is, believe me. It's not going to be what people imagine, and it's already being brought, disclosure is being brought through us now, you know, through various means, even that we don't even will be made more aware of in the future. I will tell you, in the next couple months or year, we're going to know a lot more now about what's really going on and than we do today.
How long, how many years do you give it that we'll be at that point?
Oh, I think within the next, no more than a year, I think we're going to have a lot more knowledge of what's going on. And let's just say the entities, which they're going to come as an alien race to save us. And it goes into a story I would tell you that we were made aware of, and it goes back to Rod Serling and other people, and Bruce Whitman and I, we were worked with people way back several times. Bruce actually worked with the government, and I helped him at times. They were going to bring, I've heard disclosure brought forward so many times in my career, and I will tell you, every time the government makes one step forward, it'll make three back. And but it is going to happen, but not the way they say it is.
Right. In my opinion, how do you make full disclosure at this point without completely upending the political structure?
Absolutely. You're 100% right. Yeah.
That's going to be the big part that the government's painted themselves into that corner.
Yes.
And, you know, the concept, listen, I'm probably one of the very few on this, Tom, and I'll take heat for this. I'm sure that, you know, sometimes mommy and daddy don't tell the truth because the truth is not what we're ready for, right? A little Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth. And that's a fact. We watch the way idiots respond to the slightest things. If we suddenly make them feel we can't protect them from what's coming, that's going to a lot of people are going to be shooting guns in the air without remembering that those bullets have to come down somewhere.
I'll tell you, you're absolutely right. And I still go back to my time I spent at Morley, and I love the man. He's such a genius and such a great guy, but I always go back to what, and I've got it on my wall actually here. Jacques Vallée's comment, a short little paragraph, he says, the UFO phenomena represents evidence other than dimensional. It says, simply cannot be understood apart from their psychic and symbolic reality. What we see here is not an alien invasion. It is a spiritual system that acts on human and uses human. Now, that's from Dr. Jacques Vallée, and I stick by that.
Man, there's so much to go into on this, right? And I know time is fleeting. We're going to have you back on again to talk more about this in the future, because this just seems like such a huge topic. When you talk about this rupture that's kind of happening, and it's popping up more and more, and it's coming through, right? Are we responsible, do you think, for these ruptures because of what we're doing on our planet with the, I mean, the big theory is that when we nuked and we became part of that realm, we drew the attention from visitors at that point. Others believe we've always had the attention of the visitors, but then they realized how dangerous we've become. What is the thought process with the people that you talk to, and Jacques Vallée and Ted Phillips and everybody else that's been involved in this?
And Stanton Friedman and Ray Stanford and on and on. The one thing that they told me was that the one reason why the nuclear industry drew their attention was that a nuclear explosion is one of the only things with our physics that has ramifications on the other side of the interdimensional boundary. That's why they're so concerned. It actually, there are certain elements of that that do transgress the boundary. Now, it goes into a lot deeper than that, I will tell you, but I wasn't made aware of that. You know, the one thing they told me, that we have the authority on this side to be here, and what comes across doesn't. And it gets into why is there so many UFO crashes, as you know, and Stan and Ted and I and others, we were fortunate. We went to the Aztec crash. They did an investigation years later. And it was an amazing time out there with them. But there's a reason why there are so many UFO crashes. And even in Missouri, Cape Girardeau crash. And that preceded, you know, the Roswell crash, 47. So
you talked about the Aztec crash. That's something new to me. When you say you got to explore the crash site, did you uncover anything?
Yeah, we did. There was a lot of work done on that in the past, and virtually it was about a mining company that was out there that actually witnessed a landing. Some said it was a slight, this craft came down too fast, and the government recovered this craft. And we were out at the site, and we found the actual concrete. They had to pour pads for a lifting ability to lift this craft, because unlike most people think, a lot of this is so light, it's you're talking a lot of tonnage, as Ted proved through his research and compaction tests and soil and things. So we did find the concrete pads, the structure that was built to lift this thing out of this remote area. And Scott Ramsey was out there with us. He investigated, wrote a book on this, and a very great book. I urge you to buy The Aztec Incident. And but it happened, and being out there with Stan and Ted, you know, investigating this, it doesn't get any better than that. And we went out even to the Lonnie Zamora's case, you know, and investigated that. And Ted showed us out there. He investigated that. And so, I mean, it's so much involved, more involved than people realize. And we were given a plausible explanation of why this happens.
All right. Boy, we have one segment left together with Tom. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on at Marley Woods right after this. Marley Woods. Now, this sounds like, to many of you, a place that's already got your jowls dripping. You can't wait to try to find this location, go out and investigate it. And even though there are warnings and there are dangers, but I tell you, my friends, be cautious what you wish for, because you may just find it. The portals, these ruptures in space-time that seem to be appearing around the globe and at kind of alarming rates in some instances. Tom, I need to know, do you think that, or have they done any research by looking at, okay, this is site one. We know where this is. What is directly through our planet and on the complete polar opposite of this site? And is there anything similar? Are these ruptures all over, and are they contextualized, meaning that there's, you know, if it's on the North Pole, it's also at the South Pole. If it's on the equator, you're going to find it on the other side of the equator. You know, do we show any through lines? The ley line philosophy that people talk about, is that real?
We found no real connection with the ley line theories and all that. You know, we do know that there are portals that have been documented, and even through Native Americans, certain areas, locations. And so it goes beyond that. But I will tell you that the portals themselves have unique. We do believe they're increasing, again, from the dimensional boundary weakening, and they have unique properties. And we proved that at one of Ted's portals we viewed. It came on in regular intervals over the week. And in one instance, Ted and I were watching this, and we decided to go try to get to this portal. We knew the location where it should be. So we took off to drive to this, and it took probably about 10 minutes to get, and it sounds hard to imagine, to get 2 miles, you know, but through rough terrain and that. And thank God the property owner at site one was watching us when we left from the deck that they built, Ted, on this structure with binoculars. And we got to the site. We couldn't see any artifact of the portal, no light. And the property owner, just as a fluke, I stepped on my brake light, my brakes, and we were in radio communication with the backside one. And the property owner said, "Well, guys, I'm seeing your brake lights right next to the portal, right next to the light." Now, that taught us how directional this can be. As you see in paranormal, one person mm-hmm. will see something at a certain location. Now, another person near him won't see something. We were there at the site. We see no artifact of this light, this portal. We couldn't find it. And yet my brake light was seen within probably 65, 70 foot of this portal from the original location. So how do you explain that? You know, it's
how deeply entrenched are you now in the investigation and research at Marley Woods? And what is the most recent type of activity that's going on there?
There, unfortunately, after we did film a show out at site two at Marley. 6 weeks after we filmed that show, and as I told you, you know, bringing strangers on the property seems to be that what sets off bad activity. 6 weeks after we did that, I got a call one night from the family that the property owner on site two, an older gentleman, in good health though, and we're not laying this on anything there, but he had had a stroke and died on the property. And we were slated to do things on site one, another show investigation. And 6 weeks after that, I had to call. He canceled. He was, and I don't blame the man. I'd have been there too, you know. He was afraid for him and his family. He didn't want anything else to happen. So as we speak, there's not a whole lot. We got plans. One of the other team members, fellow team members, and I hope to get out, and because the property owner at site one calls me about once a month, and believe me, activity is still going on there. But as you mentioned, I urge people, don't try to get out there. If you do find a way, and you're not going to know where the hot spots are, and respect the property owner's, you know, privileges, don't try to get on their land. And the one property owner's actually has family in the sheriff's department, which they have. Unfortunately, they've run people off and incarcerated somebody at one point. And the property owner on site one is a caretaker that will, as Ted used to say, he doesn't mess around. He has a gun. And if you're out there at night, you're asking for trouble. So don't try to get on this property, please.
Tom, I know the basis of science is let's look at the logical first and remove the logical when there, what's left is the piece that is the aha, the thing that keeps us moving. How sure are we that the things that are happening, these rifts, these lights, these different types of phenomena are not just being generated by natural elements of Earth, geomagnetic principles, underground venting, natural gases, tectonic plate activity? What do we know about that?
I am 100% sure, and so was Ted, came away with this because he felt, and we proved in so many ways, and we felt it out there in so many ways. We dealt with it. We were dealing with an intelligence. It let us know in so many ways that it was monitoring us. It was dealing with us. It was pulling our chain. It burned out cameras. And just like Close Encounter, at one point, an individual with a brand new Cadillac was out there. Windows were going up and down, windshield wipers, horn blowing. Right below us, there were several people out there monitoring this, and it would just, battery packs would go dead at the worst time. You name it. But it's an intelligence that's ahead of you.
Marley Woods, folks. And as the lights fade and the woods fall silent, we're left with a question that's haunted investigators for decades. What exactly is Marley Woods? For Thomas Ferrario, it's been more than a mystery. It's been a mission from his early years in engineering and field research to his work with MUFON founder Walt Andrus, his time as Missouri's assistant state director, and his partnership with the late great Ted Phillips on the Marley Woods Project and the Tetra Mountain Moonshaft Study. Ferrario has spent his life chasing the truth in places where reality seems to bend. Though every investigation, one pattern does remain: intelligence. Something aware, something that responds, whether it's craft, consciousness, or a connection to the earth itself. Marley Woods continues to whisper secrets that challenge the boundaries of science, faith, and imagination. Maybe that's the real message here, that discovery doesn't always happen in the light of day. Sometimes it waits in the quiet, out among the trees, for those willing to listen. I want to thank our guest, Thomas Ferrario, for joining us, sharing his remarkable work and his decades of dedication to uncovering what lies beyond. And until next week, may the darkness of this world be just a little brighter with the information that we share here each week on our Paranormal 360. Thank you, Darklings, for tuning in. And remember, if you haven't already subscribed to StreamBeaconTV.com, do it now. Catch up on my TV program, Paranormal Mysteries, Shane Pittman, Cindy Keza, and myself from the Holzer Files and Ghosts of Devil's Perch are back at it, uncovering all new mysteries specifically for you. You'll find more information at streambeacontv.com.